Warning, this episode of Android's Amazing Podcast contains spoilers for Marvel's event, War of the Realms. If you haven't finished the event, please be wary. For those of you confused on where and how this event started, the reading list is Road to War of the Realms, starting off with Thor, God of Thunder, Thor, Goddess of Thunder, the Mighty Thor, the Unworthy Thor, Thor, God of Thunder Reborn, Avengers, the Final Host, World Tour, and War of the Vampires. Then, Thor, Road to the War of the Realms. If you're confused on what order to read the actual tie-in books, you can follow this. Act 1, The World at War. Tony Stark, Iron Man 12-13. War of the Realms number 1. Unbeatable Skrull Girl number 43. Journey into Mystery number 1. Asgardians of the Galaxy number 8. New Agents of Atlas 1-3. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 43. Thor 12. War of the Realms number 2. Asgardians of the Galaxy number 9. War of the Realms Punisher 1-3, Fantastic Four number 10, Avengers 18-19, Venom 13-15, War of the Realms Uncanny X-Men 1, Superior Spider-Man number 7, War of the Realms Giant Man number 1-3. Act 2, Reclaim the Realms. War of the Realms number 3, War Scrolls 1 and 2, Strike Force War Avengers, Strike Force Land of the Giants, Superior Spider-Man number 8, Champions 5-6, Strike Force Dark Elf Realm, Thor 13, Journey into Mystery 2-4, Unbeatable Skrull Girl 44 and 45, War of the Realms number 4, Spider-Man in the League of Realms 1-2, War Scrolls number 3, Spider-Man in the League of Realms number 3, Uncanny X-Men 2-3, Deadpool 13 and 14, Captain Marvel 6 and 7, Avengers 20, Asgardians of the Galaxy number 10. Act 3, Midgard's Last Stand. War of the Realms number 5, Journey into Mystery number 5, War of the Realms number 6 and Thor 14, those take place at the same time. New Agents of Atlas number 4, and finally, War of the Realms Omega number 1. Alright guys, enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Android's Amazing Podcast. I'm your host, James Santana, and I'm joined by my now only solo co-host, our friendly neighborhood millennial, Hunter Van Lero.
You used my tag that I used one time.
I thought it was cute. I might as well keep it. Even though I'm considered a millennial myself, I hate it.
Yeah, but I'm like a true millennial.
True. We are brought to you by Andrew's Amazing Comics down in Saville, New York. Now let's start the show up first. We're going to do it a little bit differently because we have a massive, massive thing we're going to do towards the end. So we'll start off like normal with news. I guess I'm starting off with news. Mm-hmm. So, Simpsons creator Matt Groening launches a new publishing company called Bapper Comics. If you remember from back in the day,
Bapper Books.
Bapper Books, yeah. He used to run Bungo Comics. That's where Simpsons and Futurama, actually, really just Simpsons and like all the spin-out books came from. It comes out of he reported this back in Comics Beat. This is going to be solely based on his Disenchantment series from Netflix, which is actually really funny.
Disenchanted looks
awesome,
man. Yo,
I binge watched it while I was on vacation with Lee. It was awesome.
It's one of those shows that I have yet to binge watch.
You should definitely binge watch it.
Because it's one of those things that once I started, I'm not going to want to stop.
Yeah, you have to.
So
I did the same thing.
Because I'm caught up on so many other shows right now. Same with Stranger Things. I refuse to start Stranger Things right now because if I watch it, I'm not going to get anything else done.
I never watch Stranger Things.
It's really good. You should definitely check it out.
I know I should.
It's not even long. It's like 8 episodes per season. They're not really hard to get to.
Yeah. I'll get to it eventually. So, there's no release date yet, but the title of the first series is called Disenchantment Untold Tales, which are, like, it's an anthology series taking place with different stories from the characters from the show Disenchantment. It will be, more information will be coming out during Comic-Con, so
they'll probably have, like, a panel.
Yeah. It's going to be, same booth that they used to have back in the day. Bongo used to have. It's the same booth. And now it's going to be Bapper Books. And they're probably going to do some announcements.
A Simpsons book and like a Bart.
No, can't do Simpsons, remember? It's owned by Disney now.
Oh, yeah, because it's Fox.
Fox, yep.
But Groening, well, mm-mm. No, they're not doing a Marvel.
Nope.
Yeah, I wonder what he's going
to
do then.
Yeah, so we're going to see with that. We're going to go, yeah, it's just, it's weird. It's cool that they go to do
it's
that.
One of those logistics things where it's like he should do his creator-owned thing, The Simpsons, but it's owned by Disney now.
It's owned by Disney.
So if he wants to do it, it's going to be a Marvel book. And then we can have a crossover with Captain America.
Oh, Jason. Duff Man. Oh, I would love that. he joins the Avengers for an
That would be absolutely fantastic. It would be. It's just like an annual, like the Simpsons annual line where they do like five of them.
Yeah,
one exactly. for each. That would be so fucking funny.
So go from that, from Matt Groening's new book announcement to DC to adapt Rooster Teeth Ruby and Jen Lock for comic books. So
that's exciting.
I can't wait. I love Ruby.
Ruby's fantastic. Have you seen Jen Lock?
No, I haven't yet. Jen Lock really is like, want to.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yes, I heard.
They got all-star cast on that.
So I think the only reason why I included it, normally we don't do anything anime related, but I think it's cool that we know that Ruby.
Still comic book related.
Right. Because it's DC Comics.
They do have manga.
It's DC putting it. That's what's so cool they're about this.
It digitally first. They'll probably do graphic novels later on.
So it was released. This information visually dropped at RTX.
Yeah,
that's which Ruth Seats convention down in Texas. Actually, that's where my friend got engaged.
Texas and Austin.
Ooh, yeah, that's awesome. My friend. That's actually where he proposed to his now wife. That's cool. It was great. It's a thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I proposed to my fiance in her backyard. So it was that or never do it. So yes, you're right. They are going to be launched digitally first. Ruby's coming in late August, and then Genlock in September, and they'll alternate weekly. Alternate weeks on the digital platform, which I don't know if it's going to be on the DC app then.
It'll probably be on the DC
app. Ooh, I can't wait. Cool.
They're launching something digitally. Where True. Else do they put it?
Then later on, they'll be collected monthly. They'll be released monthly.
Oh, so
just like how released. They did with Bombshells. Bombshells is the most recent one.
Bombshells.
And Injustice.
And Infinite Crisis. No.
Injustice 2.
The other game one.
Infinite Crisis, you're right.
Yeah.
Infinite Crisis. Crisis on the Multiverse.
The one based on the game, yeah.
Crisis on the Multiverse. Mm-hmm. Jim Lee will be doing the special covers for Ruby and Genlock.
Ooh, I'm gonna get those covers if they're not.
They will be at San Diego first, but probably they'll be, just like anything they have in San Diego, they'll have at NYCC.
Jim Lee doing Ruby, that's gonna be awesome.
He's doing the cover.
Yeah.
Marguerite Bennett is writing it. And Marika, I'm gonna butcher names again, I always apologize. Marika Andolfo. She does Bombshells, Hexwives, I love Hexwives, and Wonder Woman, and Arfi Pirinato, who did Deathstroke.
Okay, cool.
They'll be doing Ruby, which is, I can't wait.
Who's going to be doing Genlock?
I'm pulling it up, I'm just going to tell you right now. Genlock is going to be co-written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, who did Green Arrow, Nightwing, Gotham City Garage. Yeah. Yep. Along with artist Carlo Barberini, who did Green Lanterns and Adventure Super Sons.
Oh, cool.
So, yo, these are both all-star casts,
these
man.
These are baller casts for Rooster Teeth products. Rooster Teeth is really, like, going into everything. Netflix is giving them their own Transformers TV show.
I know they are.
They bought it from, like, Machinima, and Netflix was like, if you want to put it on our platform, we'll do it. And
we'll Rooster absolutely
like,
fucking do it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be great. I can't.
I'm happy for them. They're like, they were a small startup like 11, 12 years ago, and now they're really hitting it hard. That's awesome.
It's going to be great. I can't wait to see what they do. I really can't see what they do.
I want to see if they expand on the already existing universe or if they're retelling it in a book.
It might be retelling in the beginning just to get the fans that jump from Ruby because Ruby is strictly, it's a web series, but it's on Crunchyroll. It's on Verve. It's directed towards anime fans.
Mm-hmm.
So for DC to put that book out, you know, you're going to get people that are Ruby fans that, like, I'm a Ruby fan, and I can now go to my comic book shop and buy it. Yeah. I mean, I work at one, but
yeah.
It's a little bit different for me.
That's the point of the podcast.
Exactly. But I really can't wait to show off. I want to see where Ruby goes because it is going to be going from I hope they don't do it in a manga format. I just want them to do it in an American
format. They should do it in an American format. Right. Just because it's easier for someone to pick up and read that way.
Exactly. So we'll go from DC News to more DC News. Hunter, take it away.
Yeah, Sean Murphy's teaming up with Klaus Johnson and Matt Hollingsworth to do a Mr. Freeze-centric story. Nothing's really been confirmed besides a couple pages that Sean Murphy posted on Twitter. So we don't know if it's a tie-in to Curse of the White Knights universe, or if it's going to be just like a 6-issue mini or a 5-issue mini, like how Poison Ivy got one back in like 2015 or 2016, just randomly. So I love Mr. Freeze, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen because Scott Snyder butchered his origin in Rebirth.
Yeah.
Making him a creepy weirdo.
That was weird. I don't like that.
And then because the thing that makes me think that it's going to be part of like Curse of the White Knight is because Mr. Freeze was in that story as like a good guy.
Yeah.
He ended up trying to help and then helping again in the first volume. So I wonder if the second volume is going to do that. And then if Maybe it'll be like a prequel or something. But either way, yeah. Sean Murphy is on board. I'm automatically in. Exactly. I love Sean Murphy.
Yeah, he does. I like his style. Punk Rock Jesus was fantastic. I think we can kind of say... we can leave it up to speculation based on two factors. One, this kind of happened recently with Batman Damned issue 3. And it showed that it was tied into the Joker story.
Oh, yeah, but they both did years ago.
But, yeah. So, Sean Murphy coming out with his art style and the same collaborators, you may be seeing a building of a whole Murphyverse Batman thing.
I believe they did say that a Murphyverse was a possibility.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be, like, spinoff stuff. I thought it was going to be, like, the same line.
The same, yeah.
But yeah, was, we'll like, see. I mean, I'm excited. We'll probably get more news in San Diego.
It could just be a one-shot, too.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see a mini or even an ongoing.
Yeah, we'll probably, but like I said, we'll probably see more information. Yeah,
we'll definitely see more information in, what, 2 weeks? Next
two
week?
2 weeks, I think 2 weeks.
I cannot wait.
I don't know. We're going to do
the
show then.
I love seeing the movie announcements, and I love seeing the...
It makes our show obsolete.
Well.
Yeah.
We'll have a lot. It'll just be a news-centric day. We'll be like, news from San Diego.
I guess so.
It'll just be all... We have 50 articles of news to talk about. Here we go. Because we can't just pick, like, the top five big ones.
We could.
They're all going to be... Yeah, but they're all going to be fucking huge.
You can't wait. I can't wait for San Diego.
I can't wait for New York. I get to go to that one.
Yes. We might be a little surprises there. So, we'll jump... You all set with that one?
Yeah, that's
all. Yeah, that's all we got.
Because it's still under speculation. All, yeah. We don't really know what's going on with it. He posted two images on Twitter.
Exactly. Ooh, so Twitter.
It might not even be a story. It might just be an issue in the book.
It's on Twitter. It's real, right?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
According to Bendis.
Yes. I mean, Bendis, his all aces right now. All right, so we'll go from DC News. We got a lot of DC News this week.
Yeah, we only have one thing of Marvel News.
So, what do you... Quick add-on, because this was announced, like, maybe, what, half hour before I started recording?
Hey, James, guess what? More Black Label.
Oh, my God! This is Black Label!
I just
oh, my God, no!
Black Label every week!
I can't. Anyway.
Give us money!
Anyway.
At least it's exciting
it's
Black
Label
news.
It's going to be first a one-shot. So, John Constantine's coming back to his home and going back to the Sandman universe. Starting off with a one-shot called Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer Number 1, written by Simon Spurrier and artist Marcio Takada. It will reinduct the character into Neil Gaiman's already big book.
After being absent for almost years.
Years. You know. And then, it will spin out to a ongoing called John Constantine Hellblazer, which is written by Simon Spurrier and artist Aaron Campbell, beginning in November. So, this is actually picking up pieces from his original 1990s book, Books of Magic, not his actual Hellblazer book. So, it's not going to be set in DC canon, but it's going to
be set in the Sandman canon again.
It's going to be set in his own Sandman canon, whatever Books of Magic was back then, which was their Vertigo title. So, yeah, we got more of that fun stuff, but it's going to go from years after his run-in with Tim Hunter in the Books of Magic and how that series ended. It kind of left him beaten and bloodied and left for dead. He somehow survives the experience, but now he is stuck at that age. It's a kind of a departure from his Hellblazer series, because in the original Hellblazer series, he aged in real time. This is going to go back to some magic doohickey will stop him from aging. It's a way for them to get away from the Hellblazer stuff.
Yeah.
That Vertigo did by making him age, so he can make this character last as long as they want him to. But
which
it's not
DC
set,
did.
Right? It's just not set in DC canon.
Yeah.
So they can do more nudity and it's gonna be all the fun Black Label stuff, nudity and boobs and smoking, and he actually smoke in the book.
Back to the original, he was able to smoke ish in.
Yeah, I know.
DC, but it's back to the old stuff, the old Hellblazer book.
Yep.
So I'm excited.
We're gonna see a lot of like deep dives into like what they're gonna do. It's just that's all we got so far. But yeah, it's going to come out in November. November, then September. So we'll go from that. You get that?
Sorry, I was yawning.
Yeah, it's all good. We'll go from that to, like, really super, like, limited news. Go ahead, Hunter. Take
Marvel
it away.
Marvel news. So, today's issue of Giant-Sized Ecstatics, written by Peter Milligan and Mark Allred.
That's his name.
Allred.
Yes.
It's... So without spoiling the book, they're just doing another book. It's called The Excellent.
Yes.
And it's coming January 2020.
Yep.
I am super excited because this book just screams weird fun.
Did you grow up with the Ecstatics or no?
No, I didn't. Well, technically, but I didn't read it.
All right, so a little backstory of XX. They were originally called X-Force, and they are a reality show superhero team.
They're like the New Warriors.
Before the New Warriors was that. And that's where you get all the funny, crazy, wacky stuff from.
Zeitgeist from Deadpool 2. He's one of the main characters.
Yeah.
Same with Doop. Yeah.
You know, that's how you kind of got to see some of them. So, yeah, it's right up your alley.
It is exactly up my alley. I'm actually going to try to binge the entire series before January 2020, which I think is possible.
It is. It's not that long.
It was a couple of years of writing, and that doesn't mean there's a lot of books to it, though. And I know that there's this giant-sized issue that came out.
Yeah.
So I'm just balls to the wall excited, because I like the creative team. Michael Allred did
Silver Surfer
for years, and Peter Milligan, I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with a lot of his
stuff. They had the original team for X-Zac.
I know that, but I don't know what else he's done, but the name is super familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, the original team coming back. I think that's cool that they're going to do that. I think it's nice that they're launching this hot on the heels of Hickman's House and Powers of.
Well, it's not...
It's not tied into it, but it's just cool that it's going to be... Yeah, it's cool to
see that there's another X-Men, because Hickman did say... You will be surprised of what X-Men books will be coming out after this.
I don't think...
And it's cool that the Excellent book is technically an X-Men book coming after the event, even though it's...
Not tied to it. It's not tied to it, but I think it's cool that...
I think
that
it is.
It's not going to be tied to it. I think that... Because this... It spins out of this. It spins out of the science size. But what's cool about it is that it's for fans... It's already it's already a Milligan story.
Yeah.
It's not like they were like, hey, we want to do this because of X, Y, and Z. They were like, hey, we got a story to tell with this character, and we want to tell it now while we can. And because you're revamping your X-Men books, we're going to just do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was just having perfect time. It's like weird, like, perfect timing thing.
Yeah, it says that they're going to be fighting, they're going to fight Culture War. So that's going to be fun.
It's not what you think. It's an actual character name. It's like, that's the thing. It's an actual character name.
So, I'm just excited that another fun book is coming out, because Marvel has been doing a lot of serious stuff recently.
I love Marvel serious books.
There's not a lot of fun books.
I don't like...
There's not a lot of fun books that come out. Like, Peter Parker came out, and we know Gwenpool's coming back. But the fun books have been dwindling.
Because it's hard to do fun books. You can't do...
I know comic books don't sell.
They sell, but not as much as I'd want. Well, the sad fact is this. Comic books don't sell because you can only do the same slapstick for so long before people go, all right, so where's character development? Where's the story going to go?
Even fun books still develop characters. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Howard the Duck.
But I don't consider it like Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Yeah, so that's my point, though. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is the exception that makes the rule. Because before she was the funny character, she wasn't always the funny character. Yeah, they turned her into a comedy character.
She was still always a little funny because she's the chick who talks to squirrels.
Right, but that was an in-joke. That was an in-joke on her
This made her into
books.
A jokey character.
Right, it turned her series into a comedy series, but because she's been around for so long, she had that kind of reputation. Because remember, there were times where she didn't have a series, and then she was like just a background D-list character.
Yeah,
she was the nanny
for
Danielle Cage.
Yeah.
You had her for
Avengers for a little bit.
Yeah, she was in West Coast Avengers years and years ago, and then like, oh, they make fun of it when they relaunch it as Great Lakes Avengers again.
They say, oh man, Squirrel Girl's off being a big superhero, but we're still stuck around the Great Lakes.
That's the thing. She ended up getting such a cult following that she was able to last long.
Ryan North really pushed that cult following.
Right, and I think it's that writing style. It's her supporting cast. It's not the same.
It's going to end at 50.
It is, but you know, they're going to reboot it.
Yeah, I know. They're going to relaunch it with someone that's not Ryan North.
Right. I think a lot of it comes down to
the same comedy.
Right. I think a lot of it comes down to comedy could only sell so far.
Exactly.
The reason why I think X-Zac ran its course is because we were getting out of that age of reality show. Yes, we are still in the age of reality show programming, but it wasn't like that real world Big Brother thing. You know, you can only go so far. So I think it coming back shows that we're back at that type of like 1990s level.
Which is always something I love.
So that's what it is. I think comedy books, it has to be comedic but poignant. You know, it can't be slapstick funny all the time.
It can't be all jokes. There has to be substance.
Right, and that's the problem with a lot of comic books. They'll substitute substance for more comedy.
Which is what Ziggy Seal and...
I can't remember the name.
Angry Pig.
Yeah.
That's not his name,
but I know.
Angry Pig.
Yeah.
That book was all, it was joke after joke after joke after joke. And Frank Cherry did a great job of it, but there was little to no development, even though it was a one shot. The right. Most recent one is what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
And they did make a small appearance in Deadpool, like, 9 or something.
Right. And that's the thing. It has to come down to substance. Comedy books would do well if they actually made the characters mean something. Care. Care about your characters. You know, you may be...
That's why I think Howard the Duck's Zdarsky book ran for, like, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it was Howard, but they had enough substance to it to make it a real story.
Right.
And it even tied back to, like, his first appearances and the movie where he got back with the girl he was with. I forget her name.
Oh, I forgot the actress name who played her in the movie.
We'll think about it later. Correct us.
Yeah, someone can correct us.
On Facebook or
on the Twitters.
Or whatever.
On Twitter.
Tell us who it is.
How wrong we are. My friend Dan's going to be yelling in the car. All right, so we're going to jump from comedy news. We're going to do this a little bit differently. We're jumping to our book reviews this week because we have a massive topic we have to cover. So we're going to start off. You want to start off, Hunter?
I'll start off with Red Hood.
Yeah.
Red Hood Outlaw 36 because they changed it from Red Hood and the Outlaw.
Cool.
Because he's just solo. So this is the end of the Prince of Gotham arc.
Who's it written by and drawn by?
I was getting there.
Okay.
The end of. I just wanted to make everybody know that this is the end of an arc. It's written by Scott Lobdell and drawn by Pete Woods. Like I said, it's the end of the Prince of Gotham arc, and it sets up the year Jason's Year of the Villain arc.
Yes.
Without any spoilers, I'm excited to see where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the new outfit that they gave him in issue 25.
Yes.
Even though two crowbars, a little weird, but whatever.
Yeah, that's the...
I just like how they brought back Bunker, and they brought back Jason's old alter ego
Wingman.
Who they did reveal who he is in this book.
We won't spoil it.
We've seen his face for the last three or four issues.
Yeah.
But we didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Without any spoilers...
It's a weird twist.
It's weird, but yeah. I kind of liked it.
Okay.
When I first read it, I was like, wow, everything's making sense now. If you connect the dots back from the first issue of The Prince of Gotham and even the first couple storylines for the new book that came out of Rebirth, it does set it up to where this is an obvious, the twist is super obvious.
Yeah.
But if you didn't pay attention as deeply like I did, I didn't obviously pay too deep attention. It was a cool twist.
Okay.
And I'm excited to see where Bunker's going to go, because he just fucks off. He goes, Jason, I'm mad at you, and he just leaves. And I'm like, okay, cool.
All right, because
he was one of my favorite Teen Titans characters from New 52, and then he gets dropped out of books all the time.
He does, all the time.
I think it's because he's too powerful. He's such a strong character.
He's supposed to be like he's a Green Lantern analog, if you think about it. Which is negative for the book.
I don't like what they did to the Penguin. This is a tiny bit of spoilers. In issue 25, or 24, Jason shoots Penguin in the head. But it turns out in this book that he shot him with a blank, which broke his glass and hit Penguin in the brain and made him forget who Jason... Because Jason revealed himself to Penguin. Penguin has no idea who Jason is. He doesn't know the Red Hood anymore.
No.
He doesn't remember a lot of things from the first half of the story that he was told.
Okay.
And it's set up to make Jason... It's set up for us to believe that Jason knew about this the whole time, because they literally say... Wingman asked, you planned this the whole time? And Jason was like, I totally did. It's a little lame.
Okay.
So that's got to, the Penguin stuff's got to be the low point. Because all throughout the arc, they've been teasing, like, Penguin was stuck behind the Iceberg Lounge glass fish tank. Bunker finally finds him, and he lets him out, and he just doesn't remember anything. That's just so lame.
It is weird.
Why make it such a big impact that Batman literally had to kick him out of Gotham? But now, knowing this, I don't think Batman actually kicked him out of Gotham in a real sense. Because obviously Jason's back and there's no ramifications.
I was going to say that. Like, if you were reading the book already, it's kind of one of those...
It was like 4 issues where Batman was mad at him.
Yeah.
And then after the death of Roy Harper in Heroes in Crisis, they meet up again. They have a tiny little, like, scuffle chat. And then it's like... Okay, he's like, you're still my son, I just don't want you in Gotham. And then he comes back to Gotham literally an issue later. And I'm like, alright, cool, I guess that's what's happening. It's just so weird.
It is weird.
And knowing this, why would Batman be so mad that Penguin is still alive? Yeah, he shot him, but it was with a blank. Batman would know this. It frustrates me. High points, though, just the story, the Prince of Gotham story was just a really cool one.
Okay.
It shows a human side of Jason that not a lot of Red Hood books have shown in a couple years.
Right.
So I just liked it. And always Bunker showing up is fun for me.
All right, so out of 5, what'd you give it?
Gotta give it a 3.5.
Okay.
Because of the whole Penguin thing. It really put a sour note on it.
Okay.
High points, though, are who Wingman is, Bunker, and the dog.
There you go.
And they do bring back a character 2 issues ago who was in the original New 52 run.
Yeah.
That's Isabel. She was the chick that the flight attendant that they took into space.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see her back again. And they make comment like, hey, remember space? And she was like, I don't like to think about that. It was pretty funny.
All right, so I guess...
What'd you read, James?
All right, so I read Black Hammer Justice League Issue 1, a collaboration between Dark Horse and DC Comics.
You just got into Black Hammer, so this coming out, you were I love it.
Like, I'm doing it. It's written by Jeff Lemire, and the art is done by Michael Walsh. It's the same team that does regular Black Hammer. All right, so a little background. You already know Justice League history. I'm not doing that. So Black Hammer is a series written by Jeff Lemire. It's about heroes that exist on like their own type of universe. They get teleported to a farm during like their crisis happen event, and they live on this farm. They can't leave this farm. They can't get off it. They don't know how to. So now they're stuck there, and the book opens up 10 years later after that. So that's where our book kind of is going to start off with. It's one of those. Quick recap about who the people of Black Hammer are and the characters that you're going to be seeing in the miniseries, and then you jump into who the characters are you're going to see in DC. Mostly the book focuses on the characters from Black Hammer, giving you guys a kind of quick rundown of who they are, because they are known and loved characters. Not in the sense they're not loved, they're awesome. So you get to see... I'll give you a rundown on the characters. You'll get to see... Abraham Slam, Golden Gale, Dr. Weird, Dragonfly, Barbara Alien, and Talkie Walkie for the Black Hammer people. And then for the Justice League guys, you got Cyborg, Aquaman, Flash, Batman, Martian Manhunter, Superman, Cyborg, and Wonder Woman. The stories are parallel. So you get the quick rundown of who Black Hammer guys are, and they meet up with this little impish guy. Who I want to say is Mixoplex, but I'm pretty sure it's not Mixoplex.
I don't think it's Mixoplex.
It's not, but I think it should have been. Because it would have been better. No, we've never seen him before. We've never seen him before.
So he could be Black Hammer's version. Yeah. But like, we just don't know.
We just don't know. So, while jumping into like every shot by shot, you get to see this imp show up on both worlds. While on the DC Universe, there is an invasion of Star Wars. This imp shows up and causes them to switch worlds. And that's going to be the entire series.
That's going to be fun.
That I can't wait for, because the way it doesn't... I don't want to spoil the ending, but it makes it look like... I'm not going to say it. Because it's really cool. Their ending's a cool twist where you go, oh, okay, not only... Because the twist only affects one half of the characters.
Yeah.
So, my negative is that as a person that just started reading Black Hammer, all that stuff they do in the rundown, I know of already.
Yeah,
but that's also the best part of that book. One of the best parts of that book is because if you don't know what Black Hammer is, you can read this book. If you don't know what Justice League is, you can read this book. That's the only thing. My only negative... I don't even think I really have a negative for this book. My only negative I might have is that I don't want this to be a miniseries.
That sucks, though. It's only 5
because I don't know if it's canon to the actual Black Hammer books.
Or just find out after this book.
Right, that's the one. Canon. That's why. So you know it's not canon to Justice League.
No.
Yeah, you already know it's not canon to Justice League.
They might make a mention of it, but I don't think so.
Right. So if it's canon to the Black Hammer books, that's what would be cool.
Yeah, because then it'll be like, hey, remember when we talked to Superman? And right. Like, wow. Okay.
Exactly.
Just a way to throw that in there.
Exactly. So that's my one negative, because we don't know the future of the book.
Yeah, it's one of those tie-ins, like how Power Rangers Justice League came out.
And right.
Not canon either right now.
Which it's is not canon either.
Real annoying.
I know.
But Black Hammer is just weird enough to where they could make it canon.
Right. So my favorite scene is it's really sad and depressing.
Nice.
But it's because it's when the heroes from Black Hammer end up in Metropolis, and they think they're finally home.
Oh no, that sucks.
And Golden Gale, who is like the Shazam character. She's like, oh, I'm home. I can finally get out. Because she's a 60-year-old woman trapped in the body of a 10-year-old. So she starts saying her magic word to transform back, and she just doesn't. She just cries the entire time. I'm like,
that's
it's sad.
Yeah.
And it only hits if you're a Black Hammer fan. It takes you a little bit. if you're a normal human being, you see this little girl crying, trying to transform. But if
you're a Justice League fan, you're like, why is she crying? Is she Shazam? Question mark. What's
that? Right. But you see her crying. It's still it's a cool thing because she makes reference that she's an old woman. She does make a reference early in the book.
Well, she shows up. I flipped through it earlier.
She shows up. She's cigarette. Smoking. Yeah. It smells like an 8-year-old hangover.
Girl. She's an 8-year-old girl. 10-year-old
girl.
In.
With a hangover and a cigarette.
Yeah, it's like, all right, maybe she's not a kid.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's normally beer, but since we're in that old studio.
Yeah, we're in the new studio, which is
the store. The door. It's a cool book. Definitely recommend it if you're a fan of Justice League. If you're a fan of Black Hammer, I definitely recommend picking it up. It's a cool take on both characters. I definitely want to see where Jeff Lemire goes with this. Because one is the teams, when they switch, are in two different crises. One, the Black Hammer guys are just on their farm doing what they normally do.
Also, just imagine, like every other Justice League tie-in book, just imagine their version of Earth losing, like, the seven greatest protectors.
Yeah, it's not even like
just
that.
Mostly just losing Superman.
Like, yeah, well, it's not even that. Imagine losing
Superman
and
getting an old man in space. Like, that sucks.
Yeah, like, getting an old man, like, a 1940s, like, gangbuster.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
That's not a good replacement for Superman.
Yeah. But it's cool though. I definitely can't wait to see it. I think they can go a little bit like PG hard or PG-13 because it's Dark Horse. Yeah. We're going to jump to our big topic.
Topic of the week.
Why can't we just have music here? I want to keep saying that to you guys.
It's hard and I don't want to do it.
You better learn how to. Need music.
I guarantee you I'm not going to do it.
Guarantee we'll never have music for that section. We're going to jump into our big book of the week, our topic of the week, which is our War of Realms Vapor Party.
Woohoo!
After 7 months.
Just about.
7 months, because issue 6 came out, and then issue 7 came out this month. Omega came out this month.
Yeah, Omega.
We'll
be talking about later.
Later. So, War of Realms. We're going to do a quick mini recap of War of Realms.
We did a small recap, kind of.
At three. Like,
yeah, at three or four.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, if you're not paying attention to Thor, you should be.
You absolutely should be. Event. So,
what is the War of the Realms?
What is War of Realms? Thank you for asking, Hunter. War of Realms is Jason Aaron's penultimate Thor story for his 8-year run of Thor.
It's going to be 8 years when King Thor ends,
yes. So, it will be 8 years after King Thor ends. It is his dream book. It is their dark elf Malekith. He's been playing and pulling strings in the back of all of Jason Aaron's Thor run. Really, you got to see some of that during closer towards his Jane Foster run on the book. And that...
He's been playing in this since the God Butcher arc.
Yes, he's been playing it for a while, but this actually was you got to see Malekith's part of it more during Jane Foster's run. And Malekith ends up winning He Invades Midgard. And that's where the actual book starts off.
So how did War of the Realms happen?
How it happened is this. The actual book series or the publication stuff?
The book series. Stuff is a whole different
topic. So, exactly. That's a different episode for a different show.
Exactly.
So, how did it all happen? Thank you again for asking me all these sweet, sweet questions,
that's
Hunter.
Why I wrote these sweet, sweet questions down.
You're not supposed to tell the public our secrets.
We have to tell the public our secrets. They already think we're not this clever. They'd be like, oh, they suddenly got brains.
Like, no. We're not that smart. We're not that clever.
We prepare, though.
Yes. So, how it happened was this. Malekith has been preparing for war on Midgard for a long time. So, what he started doing beyond the scenes I've never shown in the books was that he started invading different realms of Marvel's Asgardian Pantheon. Norse Pantheon. There are 10 realms within the Marvel Universe. There is Asgard, Midgard, Jotunheim, I'm going to butcher this. Safamir? That's the land of fire giants. Thank you. I'm just saying to myself. I don't know. I thanked you. You helped me not at all.
I do not know what you're talking
Heaven.
About.
Haven. However you want to pronounce it. Hell. Niflheim. I always miss a few. Jotunheim. Four Shines. I did forget that. Class of Seven. There you go.
The book
yeah, there you go. So, anyway, because I'll eventually forget it, and it's not important. But anyway, he started invading these realms and making deals with certain characters. It was his kind of his anti-League of Realms. It was one person from each of the realms that he made a deal with, that he couldn't make a deal with.
That he could manipulate.
Or just not destroy.
Yeah.
So, like, you saw him making deals with, because he himself is a Dark Elf. He never made a deal with the Light Elf. He just took over and destroyed that area. Like, that was the other realm. He just took over the other realm. You had him make a deal with Dario from Midgard. You saw him make a deal with the Urg, U-G-G-R, of the Trolls, Enchantress of Asgard, Cinder, the Queen of Sin, of Cinders from Muspelheim.
Did he do one with
the Queen, kinda, I'll get to that. He made a deal with the Queen of the Angels. And that was like his enforcers, and I think that was it.
He didn't get Asgard, he didn't get...
No, he made a deal with Enchantress from Asgard.
Oh, okay, but he didn't make a deal with any higher-ups
in right, Asgard. Okay, that's right. So, while that was going on, he was making these deals and stuff like that. He also made a deal with Loki. That was part of his thing, yeah.
And then Loki had a change of heart. We'll get to that.
Yeah, that was awful. Anyway, so this is what Malekith's forces were. It was Malekith himself, Loki, Yorlek, the Lord of the Trolls, Curse, who was Malekith's enforcer, which was an angel he transformed.
Yep, that was revealed in the Spider-Man time.
Yep, Lefay, who's the king of the Force Signs, Cinder, the Queen of Heaven, which is the Queen of Heaven in the War of Angels, Enchantress, and Daria. That was his side. Then you had on the other side, which was the League of Realms, which we saw in the Jane Foster, Lord Thor run of the book.
Yeah.
Where
the whole Council of Elders
kind right, of. Right, yeah, it was a realm, each realm was represented.
Yeah.
That's how that was. So while Malekith did that, you had Dario push his run in the Jane Foster book while Malekith was playing strings, and now he had finally gotten everything together, and he invaded Midgard. With the invasion of Midgard, we go into issue one of the series. I'm not going to do a complete walkthrough of the book.
We did the first three or four.
We did the first three. If you go back to our halfway point, one of our early episodes, we do the actual halfway point. So we then have the invasion of Midgard and the War of Realms started.
Shit. Happens. End of issue one, Loki gets eaten.
Yeah, eaten.
End of issue two, Malekith kills Valkyrie. End of issue three, nothing. Thor loses his arm?
No, you're right. He had lost his arm way before that.
No, his gold arm, he loses it.
Yo, issue three was, Iron Allfather.
I thought that was issue four.
That's right, that is four.
Issue four. Issue three was kind of probably nothing.
Yeah, that's when they got Thor back.
Yeah, there was no deaths or whatever.
No.
Issue four was
Iron Allfather.
Iron Allfather and Freya almost getting done, killed, yep. Yes. Issue five now, where we pick up. The end of issue five is Jane getting her hammer back or losing the hammer she has.
So issue, no. It's when she picks up the Warhammer. From War Thor, because she thinks it needs to be another Thor. And then issue six is the actual ending of the War of Realms. It's the actual end of War of Realms. And that's when Thor gets his hammer back. That's when he becomes the Allfather. And then Omega we'll talk about a little bit later. So, yeah,
issue six picks up with that. And then issue six, this is full spoilers.
Yeah, but we'll get to Omega later.
No, issue six.
Yeah, issue six ends with the end of the war.
Yeah,
and Thor gets his hammer.
Three Thors are around. You can't forget about that. It's young not a big Thor, deal. King Thor, and regular Thor.
That's not that big of a deal.
That's awesome. What are you talking about?
The ending I'm talking about is what matters. The ending is when Thor gets his hammer and becomes Allfather. Yeah,
he gets his golden tinted armor.
Yeah. You know, it's the end of the War of Realms. It's over. Loki's still alive. He was inside Lefay's stomach. And then everything kind of just resets. You have Alfheim is the land of the light giant, elves. They start their, they got burnt, Malekith had burned it to the ground. Nidavell, which is where the dwarfs were, they're fine. Vanaheim is the older gods. They're rebuilding everything. Svartalfheim, which is dark elves territory. And they're now free of Malekith. Cause, spoiler, Malekith got eaten by dogs.
Malekith
got eaten by dogs.
Yeah, he gets fucked up.
Asgard is still a rubble heaped. And Midgard's just rebuilding. So that was issue six. And now we're up to Omega. We'll talk about Omega. Like I said, we keep saying we're going to talk about Omega later. So we'll get there eventually.
We do find out what happens to Malekith again besides him getting eaten by
the dogs. We'll talk about Omega later.
Thor 15,
yeah.
He's the one image of him playing with the puppies.
Yeah.
That was fucking hilarious. I was actively laughing. I was like, that's funny. Of course this would be it. Thank you, Thor. Of course it would be. So now we're going to go into full spoilers on...
We're going to jump right into Omega. This is also a book review. So there's three... We're going to talk about... We'll mix it all together.
I'm going to talk about all of them.
We're going to mix it all together. So there's three stories. What are they, Hunter?
Four stories.
Hunter, what are they?
The first one is God and the Devil Walk into a Church, written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Ron Carney. The Job I Have to Do, which is the Jane Foster story, written by Al Ewing and Jason Aaron, and is drawn by Kafu? C-A-F-U? Kafu?
Yeah, I'll go with your saying.
I never know how to pronounce the ones that are just, like, one word.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Born Small, written by Daniel Kibblesmith and drawn by Oscar Bazaldua. B-A-Z-A-L-D-U-A.
I'll continue with yours.
Exactly. It's the Loki story.
Yeah.
And then War Orphans, written by Jerry Duggan and drawn and colored by Juan Ferreira. That's the Punisher story.
So each one of those writers and artists will also be doing...
They'll be continuing their books.
Yes. So this is what happens next. So before we jump into those stories, there'll be three spin-off books coming out of this. Not counting the main Thor. You don't count
Not
the
counting King Thor. Yeah.
Not counting King Thor, you don't count the main Thor book. That was going to happen anyway.
That's, yes.
So we have Loki.
Which is by Kibblesmith and Balthazar.
Yep. You have Punisher Kill Crew.
Which is Jerry Duggan and Juan Ferreira.
And Jane Foster Valkyrie.
Which is Al Ewing and Jason Aaron and then Cuffin.
Yep, so we jump right into our fully spoiled book review for War of Realms Omega.
I'm just going to go down each of the stories.
Yes, we'll start off with...
So the first one is The God and the Devil Walk into a Church.
Yes. We're not doing a play-by-play, we're not doing
You know, that. We're just recapping it quickly. It opens with... Daredevil handing the sword. This is only two or three pages.
Yes.
It's the shortest story.
It's the setup for the rest of it.
It's the wrap-up of War Scrolls and the setup for the rest.
Yes.
Daredevil gives Heimdall back his sword. Heimdall gives him two tonfas made from Yggdrasil, and then they go help somebody who's screaming.
Right. So the whole thing is that Heimdall's going to be telling everyone... he's telling Matt the stories of everyone else. Everything happening on Midgard now that the war is over.
Yeah, they're going around telling everybody.
Heimdall's telling Matt so he doesn't freak out.
Yeah.
So, the first story is the Jane Foster story, right?
The next one up, yes, is The Job I Have to Do. That is the Jane Foster story. That one opens up with Jane Foster standing next to corpses. And corpses of the old Valkyries.
Which happened back in issue 2.
Issue 2. And she's right next to Broomhilde.
Broomhild? Yep.
And then a friend walks in and they start talking and
so that friend, that character Lisa comes back from the Jane Foster run. Oh, the Thor book. Yep.
She talks about how she was given a bracelet and she doesn't know what it does.
The bracelet
it gives her some form of armor.
We're going to jump back to issue 6. The bracelet is the remnants of the War Thor hammer, which is the actual Thor hammer from Ultimate Comics, Thor.
Which is really cool to see, which was in Jane Foster's run where Volstagg picks up the hammer.
That's he became the War Thor.
Which is so fucking cool. Yep. I love that storyline. Yep. It makes him go crazy a little
yep.
bit. And then Thor walks in with his newly donned armor where he's got the gold tints and the gold thing. They just talk about they miss Valkyrie and right. that Valhalla is not back anymore and that they need a new Valkyrie.
So,
and it's Jane Foster.
A little backstory. Thor lost his eye in issue 6. Actually, issue 5, issue 6 of War of Realms. He gave it up while he was pinned to the sun. He's been in the sun because Yggdrasil, by the way, is growing in the sun now. And he gave it up just like in the old Norse mythology, how Odin gave up his eye for wisdom. That's the same thing. And then in the book, they explain how Jane, there needs to be a new Valkyrie.
Yeah, because Broomhild's ghost comes out and is like, hey, guess what? You're Valkyrie. The next one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it'd be the birth of new Valkyrie, and that's how they kind of end it, and we're jumping off into the new Valkyrie series.
I love seeing how Jane Foster... When she transforms, she just gets more hair.
Well, she... Yeah.
It always happens. It's just so cool. Because she has hair. Because she's going through remission.
Chemo. Yeah, she's in remission.
And every time she transforms, she just has more hair. Mm-hmm. I think it's really funny.
It has to be some sort of cover-up. Like, we're going to
exactly.
see... Exactly. Yeah, well, she's...
It can't just be like, hey, guess what? That's Jane Foster.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
She needs an identity. The next one is Born Small, which is a Loki story.
Yes.
And I actually really love this one. It's probably my favorite story. Okay. Because it's a Loki story that shows that he's not a douchebag.
Right.
There have been a bunch of Loki stories that show, like, oh, he's got some humanity.
And it's all twisted.
But it's always he's got some plot. This, it just seems like he's just trying to be a good guy.
Yeah.
So there's a couple, like, frost giants hanging out, and then he sees a small one, and since being a runt himself, he protects this guy. And it's just him telling stories on, like, hey, I used to be small too, but you just got to stand up to bullies. And then Loki says, I imagine I'll be worthy any day now, because he's a pompous asshole. He's like, that. I'm going to get Mjolnir soon.
I'll be worthy. Also, for a fact, it may be a foretelling to the Loki book, because
the cover, he does have Mjolnir.
Yes, and he also says that time's going to be blurred for him, so we don't know exactly when this takes place.
Yeah, his book.
Yes.
He's like, hey, it's going to be blurred for a little bit, which is weird. But that's just a continuity thing, I think, in case Loki pops up, he doesn't have the
Bifrost in that book, because the Bifrost was destroyed way before the War of Realms, during the War of Realms, and Loki uses it to teleport to, I want to say, Sotnheim, but I'm wrong.
Loki always does
weird stuff. It's weird time travel stuff.
Especially after the end of Infinity Watch, where Loki's like, I'm hanging out with Wolverine and the Time Bat guy. Like, it's just weird.
That's weird. And we'll go from there into...
The last story is the Punisher story, which I think is your favorite.
No, out of all these?
Yeah.
Gene Foster's my favorite.
Oh, I thought you...
No, Gene Foster's my favorite. I think it's just cool. I think it's just a cool concept.
I love Ferreira's art. It's fantastic.
So it's going back
to... It's Punisher sweeping up every leftover monster to avenge everyday people who are like, hey, this monster ate my family. Can you kill him? He's like, fuck yeah, I'll kill the shit out of him.
It really is. If you're a Punisher fan, it's just... It's not how they did it with the Frankencastle story, where they were like, oh, we'll add monsters to the Punisher. No, it's Punisher... doing what he does best. It's avenging families.
And Thor totally approves of it. Thor's like, you got this, dude. And he's like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
The biggest part of that book is the last page. Yeah, with the kids. And it's all the families.
We do know that Punisher has a weak spot for kids.
Yes.
He's always been, like, even there's a couple books that came out prior to this current one where he's always willing to help children. Just because I believe he sees his son and his daughter or whoever.
Yeah, son and daughter. His son and daughter. And
he always sees them and he's like, I gotta help these people.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I think it's a nice wrap up for a War of Realms. Kind of give like a springboard.
Punisher was a huge character in the War of the Realms.
Mm-hmm.
Out of everybody you thought would be a big character, Punisher was not one of the ones I'd think.
No, I didn't think so either, but it actually makes sense.
He was like helping, and he was actually being cooperative.
Yes.
He wasn't like being a dick like he usually does in all the events where he just kind of shows up, shoots stuff.
Alright, so we'll do a quick rundown. What favorite moment from this book?
Favorite moment from this book?
From Omega, yes.
The entire Loki story.
Cool.
I think I mentioned that before. It's just cool to see Loki not as shitty as he usually is.
And mine actually for this one is the Jane Foster one because I do want to see where they go with it. Because I like they gave the bracelet a name.
Yeah.
And it's because it ties back to Ultimate Comics.
That's so
cool. It's called Underguard. Out of 5, what do you give this book?
4.
Okay.
It's just another setup book. Yeah. It's hard to give setup books. I'm going
same thing.
Pure 5s. Just because it's basically like they make you buy a new book for 4 pages of the story that you're going to read next month.
I would give it a 4 too. So we'll go from what's next, coming next. We're going to do our... We'll run down to the spinoffs and tie-ins first.
Okay.
So... War of Realms itself was only a 6-7 quote-unquote issue miniseries, but there were a handful of tie-ins. You had 3 one-shots, which were, it was Strike Force, Dark Elf, Strike Force, Land of the Giants,
and War Avengers.
And then Strike Force, War Avengers. Then you had your miniseries, which were Journeys of Mystery, Punisher, Uncanny X-Men, Spider-Man League of Realms, and Giant Man. And New Agent of Atlas. Yeah. So those are 6 actual miniseries.
And then every other book was tied in.
Every other book that exists in the Marvel Universe at the time had their own 1 to 2 issue storyline.
Like, for example, Spider-Man and Uncanny X-Men had books because they had their plots that were going on
in their own book.
Couldn't deviate from their own book, so they just had their own spin-off book.
So each
same
one
had... Punisher. Right. Punisher's, he was in... during this, the War of Begalia was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He was not going to take time out of that story arc to go help War of the Realms because of all the shit that's going on.
Exactly.
So they just gave him a new book where he's just like, I'm around shooting shit.
All right.
So we're going to do a mini recap of each miniseries.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the creative teams and everything that was going on. I'll start it off with Giant Man.
Okay.
That was probably my favorite spinoff book.
All right.
Only because I love Scott Lang and every other Giant Man they gave him was from basically his book.
Okay.
Like Raz shows up, who's the new Giant Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fun to see Scott interact with him because they did that back in 2015. The creative team is Lee Williams and Marco Costello. Costello draws, Williams writes.
Yep.
Freya gives Ant-Man, Giant-Man, Atlas, and the new Goliath, Tom Foster, the mission, basically a suicide mission, to go into...
New Jotunheim.
New Jotunheim and kill Ymir because Ymir is producing more Frost Giants.
Yes.
Because a Frost Giant killed Loki and she's pissed that her son is dead.
That's
the entire story.
Yeah, that's the entire story. And they need to take over. They need to get to the Nexus anyway.
Yeah.
It's next
and
to Marvel
Scott's reality. Looking for his daughter, Cassie.
Mm-hmm.
Atlas is just kind of around. It's really funny to see, like, all three of the other giant men are doctors and, like, super brainy guys, and Atlas is just like, I punch stuff good.
Yeah, he is.
It's super funny.
He is.
And I absolutely love this book, just because it's humor done well in a very serious story situation. War of the Realms is happening. Scott, Raz, Tom, and Atlas can all make jokes and think about weird, mundane shit and go through a bizarre turn of events and just still be able to make jokes in this weird craziness. So I absolutely love it.
All right. So I'll jump to one of the other books is War of Realms, New Age of Atlas, written by Greg Pak and drawn by Gang Hyuk Lim.
We did kind of cover this.
We covered it in one of the reviews I did. What in a quick recap, this is a four-issue miniseries that involves two things. One, the birth of the New Age of Atlas, and the whole thing revolves around Cinder, daughter of Surtur, taking over the Pacific Rim. And she's using the fact that there's a bunch of volcanoes there to take over Asia. So Jimmy Woo takes all the local heroes that are in the area, plus like Braun and Silk, who happen to be there training the kids at the Woo Academy, which are the New Age of Atlas stuff. Oh, Atlas Academy, sorry. Yeah. And training them. So the new team goes and goes to fight against Sin. They don't do very well,
actually. This book's actually really cool because it brings in characters from the video games and characters from the manga verse.
Yep. But like I said, they ended up winning. All they did was they pushed Cinder back.
A lot of the tie-ins are basically just, they're all similar to Strike Force, where they're all in individual teams that have to accomplish one goal, while the main characters like the Avengers and Thor and Freya all have to stop Malekith and everything's happening in New York.
Right. You want to say the next book?
Which is a funny why Superior Spider-Man, when I get to that, they jump into that scene. The next book is Spider-Man and the League of Realms.
Yep.
Which is done by Sean Ryan and is illustrated by Nico Leone and Marco Faglia.
Cool.
This is basically the Jane Foster thing you were talking about during that storyline was the League of Realms, the bunch of individuals from each one. I will not remember their names. I guarantee you I will not remember their names. But there's like an elf, a troll, a giant. They find an angel in one of the issues. So it's just Thor basically tells Spider-Man, I trust you. I believe that you are, even though you're not the strongest or the brightest, you still inspire the most hope. And that's what these people need because they're all from broken homes.
Right.
So it's really cool to see Thor, that he trusts Spider-Man that much that Spider-Man's like, I guess I gotta do this. So then they just have to fight Curse and hold off some dark elves. They're basically like a splinter group from the Strike Force stuff.
Okay.
Because Spider-Man spins right out of Land of the Giants.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does. It spins right out of Land of the Giants. Also, what's cool about League of Realms, you get to see the birth of the curse. You get to see
the new curse.
The new curse and why she was chosen. And you get to see Spider-Man lead the team. And like,
which is fun always.
Which is always funny. It's always a good story. It's a solid storytelling. And he goes out and he has to go do this mission. Just basically on, I have to have enough self-confidence to win.
He also has to get these people who are not all friends to team up.
Yes.
One of them is an angry dwarf with a shotgun.
Yes.
It's so fun.
It is great.
I absolutely love it. And the other one's like a high tootin' elf with a cowboy hat, and he shoots
it's a light elf. Because they have the, oh my god, and he has such a ridiculous name, because they're all based on candy. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
But I love it. It's so cool. All
What's right. the next book?
The next book is War of Realms Punisher. Written by Jerry Duggan and drawn by
Juan Ferreira.
No.
It's not done by Juan Ferreira?
No.
Oh, that's just...
It's Marcelo Ferrer. Marcelo Ferrer.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, this is Ferreria.
Yeah.
They're two different people. The covers are done by Ferreira.
Yes.
And so is the other one. That's my bad. That one, the name looks similar when you glance at it. And I just thought it was initial
for the Kill Crew. So what the book is about in a quick rundown is that Punisher, Frank is not happy that these giant monsters have taken over Manhattan. But he's not, unlike the other books where each one of them is given a mission to do something, he takes it upon himself.
He's just going to shoot stuff.
Yeah, well, no, it goes back to what Omega is.
Yeah.
So what happens to Omega is that there is he sees a frost giant, kills a family of a gentleman, and he's the only, that guy, Frank, is the only, the doctor, sorry, that he helps save, the only one to survive it. Frank takes it upon himself to then realize that this has now become his own, adds to his personal war. What's cool about the War of Realms Punisher book is that it ties in classic Frank Castle mobsters are now jumping into the fray to take over Manhattan. and Frank fighting the mob and Frost Giants. And he's just hunting, the entire time he's just hunting down this one Frost Giant that killed this guy's family. That's the entire story.
That's awesome.
And it culminates into Omega. So he goes on and he gets his mission. It leads into issue 6 of War of Realms, where he's like, oh, your mission's over, blah, blah. And he's like, no, my issue's not over, and goes into Omega, which is going to go into Punisher Kill Crew. It's a cool classic mix of Punisher with monsters, but not Frank Castle style.
Yeah, which Frank Castle was cool but weird.
It was cool but weird. Next book, Hunter.
Journey into Mystery.
Sweet.
Which is written by the Clout Protectors, the McElroys. The brothers and their father. I absolutely love the McElroys. I'm not as big of a fan as my buddy Colin and Chris. Colin and Chris, their first book was actually Journey to Mystery.
Cool.
I was like, hey, the McElroy brothers book comes out, but you need to read War of the Realms. So Chris was like, guess I'm starting my pull list now. So that was his weird origin into books, besides him reading everything else. So this story it's Kate Bishop, Miles Morales, Wonder Man, an almost Sorcerer Supreme, Deathlocket, and Baldur the Brave, and then kind of Ares. They're basically just watching a fire baby.
Well, it's not just a fire baby. It's actually Thor's sister who appeared in Angela's Asgard's Assassin. And so, Thor... I'm going to jump into a little weirdness.
His name is Sebastian Druid. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh. And then the dog, Thory.
I like Thory. So, a little backstory. The baby... Alyssa? I think her name's Alyssa. She was born... They found out that she's a child of Surtur. And everyone's like, how is that possible? Do you want to know how that's possible, Hunter?
You stick your dick in fire?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Or...
the simple way of it, yeah.
That would have been the nice simple way. But it was a magical threesome that happened between Odin and Freya and Surtur. And not the weirdest way you can think of, you perverts. So how it went down was this. Odin and Freyr, they got back together after siege. And they go into this interdimensional place and they end up doing what mortals do to have babies. But because that interdimensional plane is where Surtur's essence was after he got killed, he also is part of that whole thing. And that's why the baby is now also a fire giant.
Yeah, so the story just revolves around the team I mentioned protecting the baby from Ares and from everyone else who's trying to capture it. Ares eventually turns around and kind of becomes helpful, but he's still like a dick throughout the entire thing.
I mean, it's Ares.
So it's mostly just them guarding a baby for 5 issues, which is really funny, and it's definitely down the McElroy's alley. I love Kate Bishop. After seeing West Coast Avengers end and having her jump into this was cool. And they actually make mention of it Gwenpool makes mention of it in the Superior Spider-Man where she goes, yeah, the most important character, Hawkeye, is off in a tie-in book and she's doing great. And then Hawkeye goes, I'm the most important Hawkeye. And he's just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So it's just cool to see. And this is the only story where I feel like it's the most nothing that happens. It's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
But like everything else, I didn't read X-Men, which we'll talk about next. But... in every story, they're always trying to accomplish something. Punisher seems like a lot of nothing, too, but then it spins off into Kill Crew, and Punisher is a big part of the entire War of the Realms. But, like, Spider-Man, League of Realms, Giant Men, they have specific missions that help big-time stuff. Protecting a baby, at first seems a little weird. It does end up fixing itself later, but it is the most nothing story out of all of them.
Well, because they had to put that baby so Cinder didn't get her hands on her. Mm-hmm. But the problem is Cinder's also dealing with the Age of Atlas stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. But it was good, though. It was cool seeing, like, the travel story. We went from this to the last miniseries, which is Uncanny X-Men War of Realms, written by Matt Rosenberg and drawn by Perez.
Which is the really cool thing about this is it only involves the X-Men that are still around.
Yes.
Because all of them are often Agents of X.
Yes.
And that one also doesn't... It takes place before the death of most of the new characters.
It takes place before the death of... they even said it in issue 1. It takes place right before issue, So it takes place right before issue 14, which is cool. This issue, not only being an X-Men fan, if you're a Mets fan, it's actually pretty cool because their base they set up is called Fort Syndergaard because they take over Shea Stadium and they make it their like home base and they call it Fort Syndergaard.
Sabretooth takes a big role in this, which
yes.
is like,
so,
what happens in that book besides them hanging out in Mets Stadium.
Shea Stadium, one.
Yeah, the Mets play there.
It's called Shea Stadium. I'm not calling it Citi Field. It's classic Shea Stadium. So, this takes place right before Rain dies. She's still part of the team. What's cool about the series is you get a throwback to X-Force. Okay, X-Force book where Rain's son comes back with her husband. They are getting hunted down by Sabretooth, who wants to get rid of the X-Men to remove them from the field because they are a weird rebel alliance type of thing hanging out in the center of Queens. So you have a handful of X-Men, which are Danny Moonstar, because she's a Valkyrie, Jamie Maddox, Magic, Rain, who's still alive at the point, Havoc, Cyclops, Hope, Banshee, and Sunspot makes an appearance. But what's also cool about this book, it ties into the main X-Men book by killing off certain characters.
The ones that we don't see.
Right, like Sunspot is one of the last characters. He's one of the characters to die in this book. In fact, there's a whole spread page at the end when Rain actually...
I was wondering where Sunspot fucks off to.
Yeah, he dies. Sunspot died. He's
actually... The only other X-Men that are still alive besides the ones that are in the main book are the ones that are in the X-Force book.
Yep.
But we don't know what's going to happen to them at the end of issue 10.
Yeah, we'll get that some other time. But yeah, so the entire mission for them, they're trying to save the people of Manhattan. Or like Queens, really. They retired to Flushing to just grab survivors. So that's, again, like you were saying, like a nothing book. This is like a really a nothing book in the sense of they don't have a mission from Frey or Thor or Odin. They are just like, hey, we are involved because we want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it is. It's the setup and it's defending Shea Stadium against a horde of Frost Giants. That's the entire series. But Sunspot's killed. Rain gets her kind of wrap-up story with her son and her lover.
And then she gets to die.
Then she gets to die in awful death in X-Men. Well, an awful
death, but she gets a better... ending in this book.
Because of that, yeah. Because of that, it seems like her endings, her send-offs are clean and clear send-off. So that was the six miniseries. There are three tie-ins, like we said before.
I'm not going to lie to you, I only remember kind of what happens in War Avengers, so I'm going to really hope that you remember what happened in the other ones.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we do not have them on hand to talk about the creative teams.
Yeah, you don't remember the creative teams. So we'll talk about Dark Ops first. Dark Ops is Freya's Strike Force team. It's her, Punisher, Walters Hulk, Blade, Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider. They go into the Dark Elf realm to... What their mission is to stop the Black Bifrost. It's the... Because there is no regular Bifrost to travel through, the heroes have to stop Malekith, who's been using Black Bifrost, from traveling all over the place. The entire series... The entire issue focuses on Freya testing the heroes that she's recruited to then... go on the mission to the land of the Dark Elves to shut down the Black Bifrost. It's a cool kind of wrap-up. You get to see kind of introspective of each of the heroes and what their reflections are against them and their biggest fears. And then they all fight Freyr, which is then, like, you see them all jump at Freyr because that's the final part of it. And then it's like, all right, we're all riding in the Hellcharger. And Freyr makes her last stand where she, this time you see her, she's the queen of the Black Bifrost. She takes the power.
Yeah, this one takes place right before issue 2.
Right. It's a gap between 1 and 2 of the series. Next book after that is Land of the Giants, which is Captain America's Strike Force team. It's Cap, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Spider-Man, and Wolverine going to...
Because remember, Wolverine's still around.
Yes. They are going to Jotunheim to get Thor back. Thor has been captured. Was captured at the end of issue 1. And he was just fighting Frost Giants. The entire time, the heroes... This is one of those A to B missions. You're getting... So a lot of it was them making it into enemy territory. Where it was, all right, we don't have the Black Bifrost. We have to just go. Daredevil, who's the God of Fear at the time, access to the main Bifrost with the last remains of it and teleports them to Jotunheim, where they... kind of like Bands of Brothers it and like front lines all the way into Jotunheim to go get Thor to find out that he's in a berserker rage and he just murdered all the Frost Giants around him. That was the entire issue. But the entire time you see like them trying to survive and figure out what they're going to do. And they're like, all right, we're going to get there and that's it. That's the entire issue in a nutshell. There is like, the cool part of it, they all give it Asgardian weapons. And you see that Spider-Man gets his helmet, and so the helmet actually, they don't think the helmet has power, but the power is to talk to, like, this, like, the unicorn, it's to talk Pegasus to thing.
Beasts, yes.
Yeah.
And he uses it to talk to his lovely Pegasus that sacrifices itself, and yep. I was like, no!
Yep.
That's a big thing I remember from that.
Yep. And then the last single-issue tie-in is Strikeforce War Avengers, which is this big cast here.
It's got my boy Weapon H in it.
So it's Weapon H, Black Widow, Winter Soldier, Captain Britain, Deadpool, Captain Marvel, Lady Sif. I think that's it. Actually, that's it. They are the Earth's Last Defenders. They, while Cap is leading his strike force, Freyr has her strike force, and the other heroes are all spread out. This is the team that's going to be located at Avengers Tower, doing everything that needs to be done. They are called the War Avengers for that reason. They will do everything that they have to do to take care of these monsters. Oh, Venom's on the team.
That was the other one, yep.
They do everything they can do to take care of the team. The problem is, though, they get to London, and they need help from Captain Britain, who is escorting people to his Braddock Academy, but he doesn't really want to fight in it, because he wants to save the people he can. He can't, because he doesn't want Malekith's forces to invade the Braddock Academy. This is also where we see how Malekith acquires his Symbio Sword, or Necro Sword, because he takes Venom with him during the fight.
Which is funny.
Yes. I mean, that's the entire issue.
And then that after the War Avengers, that's where Venom takes place right after? Or is it...
Before that.
War Avengers before?
Yep.
The Venom tie-ins?
Yep.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
Yep. Because that's how, at the end of it, he gets the sword. So you have that real quick rundown of the War Avengers. They don't win the entire thing. It's like, oh, well, we were able to stop them from invading London. And the next thing is like, all right, where do we go to next? And that's set up for, like, the skirmishes you'll see them in War of Realms itself. So, from there, we'll go talk about, quickly, because I didn't realize how much time we had. We're going to talk about our favorite spin-off books or tie-in issues, because, like we said before, there was a lot of...
If we didn't get a spin-off book, you had a tie-in
issue. So, we're going to talk about our favorites. So, what is what was your favorite spin-off book or tie-in,
Hunter? I really liked... Like I said prior, the Superior Spider-Man one, only because it's a team up with the West Coast Avengers, and Doc Ock can't stop himself from getting in the center of the attention. He created this device that blocks the frost giants from moving. He uses like a satellite to make like a heat ray,
right.
So it stops him from moving. But he also uses his technology to transport everyone in San Francisco into a parallel dimension until the War of the Realms is over. So he's done everything he can in San Francisco. So he meets up with the West Coast Avengers, and he's like, America, teleport us to New York. We're going to go help. We're going to go stop the whole problem because I'm the best, and I'm everywhere.
That's what he does.
So then he shows up. He meets the Fantastic Four. They go, well, you should really help us just defend the city. And he's like, nah, I'm going to go directly to this place, or we're going to fuck up the Bifrost Bridge or reconnect the Bifrost Bridge.
Reconnect the Bifrost.
And he jumps there, and it's the League of the Giants team. It's right after the Giants book.
Yep.
It's Captain America, Spider-Man, etc. And he shows up and he's like, ah, Captain America, where am I good to help? What can I do? And then the West Coast Avengers are like, yeah, we just came from New York. And Cap was like, you should go back. And then he's like, no, but I'm the best. So then Spider-Man gives him a whole talking to. He's like, if you help just one person, you've made their entire day. You're their personal hero. All you need to do is just do your part. You can't always be the center of attention.
Right.
So it's good to see... Spider-Man isn't really yelling at Doc Ock. He still kind of likes him. He's giving him a chance. And Doc Ock, by the end of the two tie-in issues, he does come around and he saves that one person. He saves the family from getting crushed.
Okay.
And they feel so gratified and he's like, nice. Spider-Man was right about something.
I guess.
So it's cool to see Doc Ock not be... Start off being a dickhead and then get, in two issues, his turnaround comeuppance where he's like, okay, maybe I can be a small-time hero and not such a dick.
That's fair. Alright, so, I actually don't have one. I don't have a favorite, like, mega tie-in, because literally, because I liked the main book so much more than anything. I liked the main book so much more. I think, overall, I didn't have a favorite spin-off, because each one of them added to the story. Like, Avengers did their own tie-in, but, like, some of it was a mix between what was going on, plus, like, if you were reading Avengers. The Venom one was a cool, like, overall... spin-off title tie-in because it would focus strictly on Venom during the War of Realms. So it depends on what you liked. I liked all of them, technically. I just couldn't pick a favorite because they all, I think, in the end, added to the story in their own way. And plus, if I was already reading the book, it made the book even better. So go from there to what our favorite moments were overall from the entire series. We'll jump in right to our favorite moments. Hunter, what's your favorite moment overall for War of Realms? Your favorite moment overall.
There are a lot of
every book and everything. There
are a lot of batshit moments in it, but the best moments, in my opinion, come from the main six issues.
Okay.
Each issue, except for issue 3, because we really couldn't remember what happened in one of those. Issue 1, the final page of Loki getting eaten is such a big what-the-fuck moment for me, because this thing came right before they announced his new book, and I was like, I guess Loki's dead. If you die in an event, you die for real, at least for a little bit. Anyway, it's still good to see, like, Loki just get fucking eaten by, like, his dad. It's just hilarious. And that sets up my favorite book, Giant Man, which is another reason why I like the Loki death as my favorite, like, what-the-fuck moment, basically. Because Frey is like, he killed my little baby boy. You must murder every one of the Frost Giants. And Scott's like, yeah, okay, I guess.
I guess.
So that's my favorite moment from War of the Realms. Overall? The end of issue 1.
Okay. So,
don't get me wrong, Thor's arm, the three Thors, that stuff is fucking cool. But you just can't beat Loki just getting crunched on at the end of issue 1. And
it was just a twist. It was like, oh, wow.
Because his dad ate him. Like, that's what?
Yeah, it was a cool, like, wow. This is how we're opening the series? Yeah. I guess we're all effed. Oh, actually, I was going to say, damn it. I don't want to pick from issue 1 either, because there is a cool scene in issue 1.
What is it?
The last page, where he's actually captured by the Frost Giants, and he goes to the Berserk form. Oh, actually, Odin. Nope, that's what I was going to say. Okay. It's the fight with Iron Odin and Freya fighting against the Dark Elves at the Black Bifrost. That's issue 4. And it's the last stand. And you know, like...
That's what we think they died.
Yeah, that's what we talked about in the episode. It really was a what-the-fuck moment, because it was about to go down. Like, you didn't know if they were going to live or die, and that's why he's like, look, he got to say his piece to his wife one last time. She's possessed by the Black Bifrost. He's made of magic. He's the Iron Allfather now.
Which is so cool.
It was so dope. It was just a whole thing, and I loved the scene. It was them forgiving each other, going, hey, this is our last stand, and we might as well go out with a bang no matter what happens. We're fighting here. It's our last stand. I think it was so killer. So that was our favorite moments.
I just thought of something. What is your least favorite moment from War of the Realms? Mine is that Beta Ray Bill doesn't show up.
Okay.
Because, think about
it. He's doing Guardian stuff.
I know. I was looking at the back issue, the back wall, and there's the, what is it, 337?
Yeah.
Of him breaking down the logo. I understand, like, he was in space, and he's mostly a space protector, but in a Thor event, they don't show Beta Ray Bill?
I think...
It was a little weird for me, honestly.
I think in trades you'll see, because normally they put, like, little stuff, like, forwards and shit like that, and afterwards, in them, so you might be able to see, like, why Jason Aaron really didn't use him. I really think because he was in Guardians, and Donny Cates is using him in Guardians, and they might have been the time when they were in that weird parallel... the black hole thing.
Like, if Beta Ray Bill shows up in a Thor book, or Thor goes up into space for some reason.
Yeah, we'll see him there.
Or if Guardians of the Galaxy, they land on Earth and they go, what happened? Yeah. Like, the War of the Realms, Beta Ray Bill, we called you and you weren't here. What happened? He's like, oh, I was stuck in a portal for like 3 hours or whatever.
Yeah, so that makes sense. That's that might have been like a thing where Donny Cates was like, look, man, you can't use him. He's in a space hole.
Yeah, he's doing a whole thing.
Like, I wrote Beta Ray Bill and he's crammed in a hole somewhere in space. You can't use him. Oh, man, why not? Now he's part of the Guardians.
That's just such a small thing.
Yeah.
I really can't give too much shit to War of the Realms besides so many books came out.
So many. I think but my
event
pretty, he did event very well. Yeah. I think my least favorite moment of...
Besides the spoiler that Loki wasn't actually dead.
Because, that's whatever.
Because when Loki died, they revealed that he's getting a book. But then in issue 12 of Thor, which came out the next week, it revealed that he wasn't dead anyway.
Oh, shit. Actually, my favorite moment should have been the Kull episode. The Kull issue.
Ooh, that's Chris's favorite.
That is Chris's favorite. Damn.
Was that issue 13?
Thor, yeah. Of Thor. I think my least favorite of the entire War of Realms, honestly...
You don't have one, but you gotta think. You can think of something. I know you.
I know.
You can hate on about anything.
I can hate on anything. It's not that... The problem with the War of Realms, I don't have a worst moment in War of Realms. It's one of those, it's something they did I didn't like that they did.
Yeah, I don't hate anything. I just didn't like how Beta Ray Bill was there, because he's such a big Thor character.
I think the thing was, so you saw, I think I would have set up a little bit differently with War of Realms, as Do you remember that they had the map in the back, in the opening of some of the issues about who took over what territories?
Yeah.
You don't get to see, explore those territories.
You only explore what was showed up in the book.
Right, which
it's
was...
It's mostly in North America and yeah. kind of in the ocean with...
The Pacific Ocean
the
with...
The Journey to Mystery kind of touches upon some
but
of
But they did the Midwest, but they only really do Midwest. Yeah. So really what I wish they, the Titans did were go, hey, we're going to show the world at war and like see what Dario is doing in Antarctica. You don't cover that at all. Yeah. You know, we're going to go to... Like, they make reference to it... To it in Avengers, the She-Hulk issue, where she fought the trolls, and that really, I think, actually, you know what my least favorite moment is that they didn't make War Avenger the actual miniseries. That should have been a miniseries.
They could have been traveling to all the places.
That should have been the miniseries.
If you think about it, the new Strike Force books that's coming out, it doesn't tie into anything.
No, it's the name.
But the name Strike Force. They could have just done War of the Realms Strike Force.
Yeah.
And had the War Avengers team traveling and picking off all the other things. And then have Land of the Giants and
the Dark Elf.
Not called Strike Force, just called War of the Realms, Land of the Giants. But even, War of the Realms, Dark
but
Elf.
But even if they call it Strike Force, it'd be fine. And then when Strike Force won, when the Strike Force Land of the Giants, Strike Force Land of Dark Elf, and then War of Realms, War Avengers. And four issue, and then made them the travel team. Because you see them, cause that's the whole setup. And they one issue. Well,
because Captain Britain is in England.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I don't want anybody coming into my
school.
My British school. Fuck that.
But yeah, you see, but you also see that, like, the Avengers issue with Hulk. She-Hulk makes, technically, she's not She-Hulk anymore. Jennifer Walters makes the statement about when she fights the King of the Trolls in Australia. And they bring up in the other books where they've been traveling. It's like, that would have been a cool series to see. I just don't think they had a writer to do it. I don't think Jason Aaron would be like, yeah, let me write my Thor book, this, and pen out everything else. Yeah. You know, while I'm doing that. I think that's the one missed opportunity they could have done.
They also probably hit their limit on how many books they could throw
in. No, they could have done more. There's no limit. When you publish your own books, you're printing money at this point. All right, so...
So your least favorite moment was there's not enough.
Not enough. Well, yeah, not enough. There's not enough of it. No, I think it was not enough focusing on the world
at
large.
We want to see the Avengers go on a European vacation.
Well, you know what? It wouldn't have mattered. My thing is, why talk about it being a Earth-based event
if when you only show North America?
You only show the United States. Like, I get we're best USA, USA.
Freedom!
I mean, they have oil over in Asgard, being the freedom. But that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. I think they should have just... The War Avengers book should have been like, hey, we are the Avengers. And also, there's something else they mentioned that they were going to do, is that they were going to bring Bast into it. And we saw on the cover of issue 5, where the Black Panther riding that giant fucking...
Oh, Bastet?
Yeah. God Panther, we never saw. So I'm like,
I think it was just cool for the cover.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those cover misleading things. Usually events don't do that, but it happens sometimes.
So that's my only misgiving. So I guess we're...
Out of a whole... So rating events is hard.
Yes.
But since War of the Realms is so cool, what would you give...
Okay, I know.
What would you give War of the Realms out of 5?
Out of a whole.
The entire
event plus tie-ins and everything. I think I'm going to give it a 4.5. Because I love everything. I just wish they explored the world as much as they could. I said my only misgiving. Actually, fuck it. I'll give it a 5. Because if that's my nitpick because they didn't give me more of what I wanted.
Exactly.
It's a fucking 5 book. I can do that event all day. I can't wait for that to come out and trade. I'm buying it in trade.
I'm only going to give it a 4.
Oh, get out.
No, because...
You're fired. I need a new co-host. There's an opening for a new co-host now.
Because I have not been reading Thor for the last 7 years.
Okay.
So when you were like, hey, War of the Realms comes out, it's a Thor event, I was like, oh, that's cool. I pick it up and I'm like, this has been planned for 7 years. I was like, I'm not going to go back and read those books, so I'm just going to pretend like I know everything.
Jesus.
And they do catch you up on a lot, don't get me wrong. They have a lot of good catch-up stuff, but not knowing everything that's going on, I was kind of like, this is just a Thor event, that's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, for Secret Empire, they showed you the entirety of Secret Empire. So I was all into that. Even though the event was meh at best for me. So yeah, I'd give War of the Realms a 4. Only because I wasn't reading Thor for the last 7 years.
It is a lot for someone to jump on from...
Like, my buddy Chris, if he wasn't doing the whole thing where he was reading everything from Marvel Now up until recent, and he's already up into like 2016 or 2017. He's getting pretty damn far. He started with War of the Realms, basically.
Right.
And having him, like I said, if he didn't read everything prior, he would know nothing.
Right.
He would just go, this is a cool event. And it is.
Yes.
And it's got lasting ramifications, and it sets up like 8 other books, which a lot of events don't always do.
Right.
But having it be with 8 years of comics that you have to read, it's kind of annoying for new readers.
Yeah.
But like I said, it does keep up. That's why it's not... Like, if I was a real dick, I'd give it like a 2 or a 3, because like, I know nothing. Anger. It's a solid-ass 4 book.
Yeah.
It would be a 5, like you said, if I knew everything. You right. know everything, so you were like, I have all this knowledge, and look what's happening.
It was just good. It was just yeah. good. It was...
Marvel has been doing meh events for a little bit.
But this is
But this was one of the ones where they were like, guess what, Jason Aaron, he knows what the fuck is happening. He's been planning this for years.
So I guess that's it for a War of Rome Wrap-Up Party.
Yeah.
I guess
we did a big old wrap-up.
Oh, yeah.
We covered everything. If we miss something, tell us, because I feel like we missed just like a tiny thing.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening, everyone. You can head over to our website, androidscomics.com, to check out this week's previews and new releases. Follow us on Instagram at androids_comics and Twitter at androidscomics for up-to-date news. If you listen to us on Apple Pods, don't forget to rate and review us. And if you're listening on any other app, don't forget to share. And as always, support your local comic shop and have a good day.